Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey Podcast. I'm David Staples from the Cult of Hockey, surprisingly. And Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey. That's three Cult of Hockey, four Cult of Hockey plugs, four. Five. we're rocking the podcast already, Bruce. Hey, I was at a wedding, Bruce. I was at a wedding and someone from Vancouver was at the wedding. They said they listened to the Cult of Hockey podcast. That felt good to hear that. Like, people are listening to this.
Sweet.
3,000, man. During the playoffs, we were rocking it, man. We were a sensation on the airwaves? Are these airwaves? The Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. What do you call it? The ether?
The ether. Yeah.
Or ethereal.
You were the ether lord. Damn. All right. The expansion. We're going to talk about the expansion draft. We're going to talk about whether there was a little or a lot of activity, because some people are saying there was no activity. I heard that on the radio. Uh-huh. There's no activity. And then we're going to talk about what the Oilers are going to do. And we're going to talk about all the myriad possibilities that people are floating out there in a desperate attempt for the Oilers not to sign Chris Russell. You know, we're hearing 500 defensemen that the Oilers could bring in because you cannot possibly tolerate Chris Russell coming back. So we're going to deal with that. And finally, we are going to look at the poison pill lineup, because when I looked at that list, Bruce, of players eligible for the expansion draft, wow, there's about 40 stinking contracts in the NHL, Bruce. They reek. And you know, the Oilers have a couple of them, but I don't think they don't have the worst of them. They do not have nearly
not
the
even
worst
close.
Of
not
them.
Even close.
Oh man, there's some bad ones. So I'm sure every fan in those cities are sitting there like we are, thinking, geez, I wonder if we offered a draft pick and that player, if they'll take that player. And apparently, this is a segue, one of the deals worked out is exactly that. I've heard rumor that Columbus worked out a deal that they're going to take the David Clarkson contract.
Wow.
Which is a stinker of a deal. I think it's got 3x5 left, if I'm not mistaken. 3 years at $5 million left. And did you hear that rumor too?
Yes.
So that's, I don't think there's been a little or no activity. There's been really quiet. It's been quiet, but it has been loud behind the scenes. And obviously teams like Anaheim with Manson and maybe Florida with Marchessault. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah. Something like that.
That's good enough. Jeez. We're just on the Ethernet. We're not on the airwaves. So Marchessault right. Will do. So I think there's been a lot of activity. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the cones of silence have descended over the league. I mean, they kindly gave us that one release of expanded protected lists at freaking 8 o'clock on Sunday morning. And
no,
otherwise,
not at 8.
We got
not
to
at
wait.
8. We had to wait a half hour.
8:30. That's right. We had to be up at 8 so we could find out it was delayed.
Jackasses.
That was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's our one sort of bit of official information in 4 days is, suckers, get up on Father's Day morning to listen to this. So anyway, we got up and we listened.
Did you find it a letdown, Bruce? When I looked at the list, I found it a letdown. Like, it just seemed like,
it
didn't seem that exciting. Like,
we had the Oilers list pegged weeks ago, really.
Yeah.
As soon as they signed Pekarinen, well, okay, now they can protect Letestu, done deal. They got veterans. 11 veterans are going to protect, and that's exactly what they did. And they left several sort of tempting, tantalizing young guns, or young, I'm not sure what you want to call them, young potential players out there. And Vegas, barring a deal, Vegas will likely pick one of, I got about three guys on the most likely list.
You know, the one list that I really liked, Bruce, there was one list that I found it kind of, like I said, it was an anticlimax and kind of boring. But there was one list that I thought it was made by a madman. It was so insane to me. And that was a New York Islanders list.
Oh, yeah.
What
in the hell
Adam
are they doing?
Who is Adam Pellick? Like,
well, he's better than Kelvin DeHaan, apparently.
And better than...
And
you
also
have
better than
Brock Nelson.
Better than their fourth forward,
have Josh Bailey, who had 50 points in the NHL. Like, that's... He's Jordan Eberle, right? You have... They exposed Jordan Eberle, except on a really cheap contract. Cheaper contract. Yeah. They exposed Brock Nelson, who had 20 goals and 45 points, and he's a center. Well, he didn't win a lot of faceoffs, but he is a center. And they protected Adam Pellick. Like, no one predicted that, Bruce. Go ahead, what's your theory?
I got two theories. One is they're high on Adam Pellick. And the other is
high being the operative. Sorry, Matt, I read your punchline. High being the operative word. Yeah. Now, Ryan Pulock.
3-5-1, and they couldn't protect five defensemen, and they couldn't protect Calvin Hoff.
Well, that was a shocker.
Hello, let's talk to New York Islanders about defensemen they don't want.
I don't mind protect. Now, there's one, Andrew Ladd. Like, if he didn't have a no movement clause, would they have protected him after his Sterling 8 assist season? He did get 20 something goals, though. So, you know, and he only has whatever, like 15 or 25 years left on the contract. So I'm sure that's going to work out. Okay. So that's the one that I loved. And I loved it for another reason, because Brock Nelson, I was hoping. We'll get into this later. I'll bring up my Brock Nelson theory later when we talk about how the Oilers can win the Vegas expansion.
Okay.
All right. So you're agreeing lots of activity, like Anaheim, for instance, with Josh Manson. There is no way they could have bought out Kevin Bieksa, correct?
Yes.
And if they had bought out Kevin Bieksa before the expansion draft, they would not have had to protect him, correct?
Yeah, so they could have asked him to waive his no-movement contract. And the fact that neither of those things happened supports the strong rumor that they've already got a deal in place with Vegas.
And I heard it might be for Vatanen, too. Like, it might be both guys. Like, which means they've identified a player that they want them to, Vegas to take, which isn't either Vatanen, who's apparently injured. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe that's not true. I think Anaheim's spreading that story so he doesn't get drafted.
Well, Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm, they're both injured at the end of the playoffs, long-term, almost like Sekera-type situations. But if they had been able to expose or get rid of the Bieksa situation somehow, they would have protected, I'm sure, Manson, still left Vatanen available. And I'm thinking the agreement they made with Vegas may well just center around the idea of, you guys want Vatanen? Fine, you've got him. If you agree that's the guy you want, we'll leave him for you. Just agree you're not going to take Manson, and then we don't have to bugger around trying to buy out Bieksa. We'd rather not have to do that, but we will if we have to. That's a theory, but at least it kind of holds together with the observable facts.
Someone wrote on Twitter today that on the Anaheim protected list were the NHL referees.
I saw that. I loved it.
All right. We're not over that, are we, Bruce? We're never going to get over that.
You know what? I'm still not over 1986. And I'm probably not going to get over Ryan Kessler holding Cam Talbot's legs apart for 4 seconds with the puck going through the legs in the dying minute, and all of the referees and replay officials missing it. Probably until the day I either leave the planet or take leave of my senses, which is one of them's coming soon.
Mm-hmm. And that day when you take leave of your senses and protect Adam Pellick. All right. And Chicago apparently has some deal where they take Van Riemsdyk, who's only 25 and might, I don't know, is he that horrible a player? And then are there any others? Oh, like Florida with Marchessault,
yeah. Jonathan Marchessault.
30 goals, pretty impressive. Yeah. Like, you know,
750 grand, 30 goals, and he's got 1 year to go on it. So he was like, he was one of the bargain contracts in the NHL last year.
Hey, you know what? That is correct. And 30 goals for that amount of money. One other one that interested me was Nashville, because everyone's saying James Neal. And yeah, he's a proven 25 goal scorer a year, right? But you know, the player that I like, I don't think they're going to do this. I really liked Austin Watson. Whenever they played the Oilers, I just thought that guy was he's younger. He's trending up. Neil may be trending down. I think they're going to take Neil because they can turn him into something else. I think when you look actually at Vegas, the smart thing for them to do is to every player they pick, it's like, okay, what can we convert this into in terms of draft pick currency or prospect currency? And so when you look at Neil and Watson, for instance, who I think that's, for me, would be a close call. Neil's probably more transferable into draft pick currency than Austin Watson is. Watson might help your team more over the next 5 years than Neil, possibly. Although, yeah, Neil's 29, Watson's 25. So that's how they're going to do it. It's just how convertible are they? And actually, I did a draft of their team last night. I posted it at the Cult of Hockey this morning. We're not Vegas fans, so we won't get into that, though, who I think they're going to take. The only takeaway, Bruce, from that is, I guess we can talk about this right now, is that they're going to have a ton of decent defensemen the Oilers could possibly grab. And the one name that stood out to me is Tobias Enstrom, who has been a good player in the past. I think he's a good player now, an okay player. Mm-hmm. He's getting a little old, but he's only on a one-year deal. It's a lot of money. 1 year, yep. Yeah, 1 year left, $5.7 million. But if the Oilers are going to bring in a D-man, Bruce, that's who I'd like to see them bring in, a guy on a one-year expiring contract, even if it's a big overpay like that. If you're not going to sign Russell because you don't want to lock into that term, that's who I would bring in, not some other guy on a long-term contract who's marginally better or arguably better, but the key word being arguably, on this long-term. Why would you do that? I just, you know.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Enstrom, he's $5.7 million or something, but you would get with the Oilers, they're looking ahead to getting cap relief for the long-term injury status of Sekera. So basically, they're going to get a chunk of Sekera's $5.5 million to spend on a Sekera replacement. And the financial sort of issue would come when Sekera came back and then you had both guys on your roster. So, you wouldn't want to spend to the cap assuming no Sekera. So it's going to be kind of a tricky balance. But
yeah, it would be almost like bringing in Enstrom at the trade deadline, right? Like it's like in terms of this, how the salaries work out. So I think that might work out. I think that might be...
What you don't want is a contract that runs through till 2020. I mean, we've already got three long-term contracts on defense, and both of Nurse and Benning coming due in 2018. And that's leaving the McDavid question aside. I'm just looking at the defense.
Well, there's
I think if you don't want to necessarily lock down your top four forever when you got a couple of pretty decent young players chomping at the bit to move up. So a one-year contract of a proven player is a pretty nice solution.
I wrote a post about this very thing with Nurse and Benning on the weekend because, you know, I listened to all the radio stuff and all the commentators, and Craig Button was on Jason Greger's show. And I listened to him most Fridays, and I've come actually from a point where I was 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't think much of the guy. You know, maybe because it was like because he was Flames GM and I just hated the Flames. So I, you know, tend to poo-poo anything they do down there and don't think too much about it. Just kind of have a knee-jerk reaction. But listening to Craig Button week after week after week, this is very astute, smart hockey man, good judge of talent, and someone who understands team building as well. And he said something on Friday, Bruce, that just really, really, really hit the spot for me. And that's with Benning and Nurse. Like Greger was going over the usual list of defensemen and throwing out some names like Alzner and Michael Stone, is that his name, from Calgary? And and Button just exploded all of a sudden. Like, you know, essentially, like, you know, with Benning, like, why would you block his development?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And here, I'll quote him here. He says, just because you're unproven doesn't mean you can't play in the top role. I thought Matt Benning took massive strides forwards last year. I saw what he did in the playoffs. You know, I think one of the real benefits for the Edmonton Oilers right now is that they're considering the Secker injury. They don't have an unknown quantity in Matt Benning anymore. Get him out there and let him play. I mean, where are you going to find a player like Matt Benning? Michael Stone is not better than Matt Benning. Carl Alsner is not better than Matt Benning. And then he did the same thing with Nurse. Like, essentially, you have these two young guys. Let them play. So that's an interesting philosophy. Even if there was no salary cap, that's a philosophy which some teams go with. You develop players, and when they're ready, when they show signs they're ready, you don't block them with more veterans. You don't bring in an old veteran. You actually let them play. And we've seen this in other sports, baseball, football. You know, teams with a lot of real success have done this in the past. And that really resonated with me. And in a cap era, Bruce, it was doubly so, because if you do bring in a veteran, especially a guy in a long-term deal, you can't there's no ice for these guys, and there's no money for them either down the road. And that's how you end up. So there's this trade-off, right? Like, Chicago faced this trade-off a couple times, and they brought in expensive guys, and they won the cup, but then they had to let go of Nick Leddy, right?
Right.
So some people will say, well, let's bring in Jason Demers. Let's bring in some other names. I don't know. Demers is the one I see the most. Let's bring in a guy like that, 4-year, $4.5 million contract. Mm-hmm. And so what do you make of it, Bruce? To me, I want them to go. I think these guys have shown every sign they're ready. I want them to bring in a guy in a 1-year deal, some veterans on a 1-year. I don't want to see them sign a marginally better player than Chris Russell or Chris Russell himself if it means letting go of Benning or Nurse.
Yeah. Well, the Chris Russell deal last year was great. It worked out really well. The 1-year deal brought in a veteran for the top four, allowed Benning and Nurse to play mostly in the third pairing throughout the year. And looking forward 1 year, if Benning and Nurse are Oilers' third pairing next year, they're in good shape. You just don't want to block them for 2, 3, 4 years down the road of ever having a place to move up. As we know, watching hockey, usually the third pairing guys get chances to play in the second pairing because injuries happen, which has happened with Sekera. Last year, Benning moved up a lot into the second pairing when anytime Russell went down, which he had a few short-term injuries. He seemed to handle the role pretty good, and he certainly, to me, he screams potential top four defenseman, Matt Benning. But is he ready to move into that full time next year? The shelter of a veteran under contract is a nice thing to have, but I'm with you in that I don't really want another four-year contract. They've already got Klefbom, six more years. Larson, 4 more years. Sekera, 4 more years. That's your top three. And then if your bottom three is the two emerging young guys plus a solid veteran, hey, that's great. I just don't want a solid veteran at big dollars for long term.
They've made their bed, Bruce, and now they have to sleep in it. They signed Sekera to that contract. They got to live with it. The good news is, people say, well, what are you talking about? You can't. This is crazy talk, Staples. Like, don't you know what happens when you rush young defensemen? Didn't we see 10 years of that? Here's the difference, Bruce. They have a top pairing right now. They have Larson and Klefbom to play in the toughest situations and to eat some major minutes next year. You're not throwing Justin Schultz into the toughest, deepest end. That's not what's going to happen to Nurse and Benning if they're in the second pairing. They have those two guys, which they have lacked forever. You know, maybe since Smeed and Gilbert were okay in a top pairing role. Well, Klefbom and Larson are going to be considerably better than those two, who were marginally okay-ish, maybe. These guys are going to be...
Smeed and Gilbert.
Yeah, go ahead.
Or Smeed and Petrie that were pairing at various points. They weren't too far removed from where Nurse and Benning are now, and yet they were thrown into the top four, if not the top two.
Well, they were in the top two, right?
Did not end well. But if you have a shelter of a solid top pairing, I mean, it's not enough shelter. Ideally, you have four solid defensemen, and that's certainly what Todd McClellan did this past year. Was he had two defense pair that basically he trusted in any situation, and spotted in the other guys. And so I mean, Larson and Klefbom aren't going to be able to play 30 minutes. So
no, they're not. No,
are they ready?
And they're going to need to bring in a couple, like a veteran. Like, there's no doubt about it. But maybe that veteran isn't a guy on a four-year deal. So what would you think, Bruce, if they did trade Eberle for Demers, for instance, or some deal like that?
Yeah. I'm not sure I like that deal. Demers' contract alone suggests that the fact that he's available in the expansion draft suggests that he's not they probably happy to move along that contract. It's the first thing I'm thinking, or else they're thinking Vegas just isn't going to bite on it, because Demers is he's pricey. I wasn't too thrilled with the season that he had in Florida, mind you. I didn't watch him play a bunch of games, but it didn't really look like it clicked. Florida certainly went backwards last year. It's the same story. It's a four-year deal for a fourth defenseman who ultimately, if you have all four holes plugged in your top four, then you're really stunting the growth of your young developing guys.
I'd like to see them, if they're going to bring in a guy, bring him in at the deadline, essentially, like Pittsburgh did with Ron Hainsey this year. It works out now and then, right? Like we see almost, it's probably on average, one of the teams in the finals has brought in a defenseman into their top four each year at the deadline, and it's helped them get to the finals. So I think that's actually a better strategy. I just don't think you can afford. Now, what about Tyson Berry for Eberle? Which is another, to me, that's interesting. That's worth thinking hard about. Because Tyson Berry's young. I think he's a really good player. I think he's that much better than Demers. If Demers was on like a $3.3 million contract over 2 years, I'd think, oh, that's kind of interesting. Wow. $3.5 million, like if he was an average contract for the NHL, but he's overpaid. As far as I could, like he's never been more than a top four second. He's never been more than a second pairing D man. He might be less than that. So anyway, but Barry, you know, I can see there are Justin Falk. There are some names out there that I think you'd still move on perhaps, but I'm not seeing, you know, but what about Matt Dumba if he came free, Bruce?
Yeah. Well, that's a guy that, I believe he is a
RF. He's on a 2 point.
He's got 1 year left at 2.5. That's beauty. Yeah, I don't mind that. 2.6. I don't mind that. And then he's yours to sign or do long term or not. Then he's coming due at the same time as Nurse and Benning, and you pick the best two of the three maybe and trade the other guy. I mean, at least you got some options there. You're not locked into some guy. Or if you bring in Jason Demers and he has another bad year, how are you going to move the contract?
Yeah.
3 years left.
There's Mark Mathot. He's got 2 years left at $4.9 million, which is kind of tough. Paul Martin, two years at $4.9 million. Then there's a player by the name of Brandon Davidson, Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
1 year at $1.4 million. Now, that might be someone who, depending on what they think of the guy, he had such a tough year. I think it's a really tough year to judge him on based on the nasty slew foot injury that he got early in the year.
That's another thing on my I won't forget list.
Yeah, neither will
Matthew
I.
Kachuk, you're in the bullseye in terms of tightly watched.
There's a number of defensemen they're going to get. Braden McNabb, probably. So there are targets there that are on much. He's got 1 year left at $1.7 million. The Kings have so many bad contracts, they have to actually give away a decent player on a decent contract in Braden McNabb. Man, Lombardi, I guess it's the price you pay for winning. When I look at teams like LA and Detroit, and we're going to get into this a second, man, they got some bad deals. All right, so we're not too thrilled with the idea of bringing in a veteran.
Long term.
Okay. We're in agreement on that. All right. We're in the minority, Bruce. We're in the minority. Most people are all over this. They want to bring in a as good a player as you can on a long term deal. So
Well, and what about the internal solutions? I mean, this is where who Vegas chooses off of Edmonton will have an effect on where they go.
All right, who are they going to take?
I think three sort of logical choices, and they're all young guys, and only one of them is now under contract, which he wasn't a few days ago, that being Jujhar Khaira. The other two being unrestricted free agent forward Tyler Pitlick and restricted free agent defenseman Griffin Reinhardt. And I'd be surprised, personally, if Vegas didn't take one of those three guys unless there's some other kind of deal that gets put in place. You know, the legendary Benoit Pouliot. Hey, we'll throw you a fourth-round draft pick if you take Pouliot and his two-year contract. Unless something like that transpires, it'll be one of those three guys. And my thinking is that the signing of Khaira was actually a little bit of a carrot from Chiarelli to entice.
Because they need 20 contracts.
Yeah. They need. Yeah, there's a couple of rules in the expansion draft that, first of all, 20 of the 30 guys that they pick have to be under contract. So if they're going to go after restricted free agents or even unrestricted, because they can talk to anybody who doesn't have a contract in the next, 2 days, they need to have 20 guys under contract. And those 20 contracts, 20 plus contracts, need to add up to at least 60% of the 2016-17 cap limit. So they need to get about $43.8 million of already existing signed contracts. And Kara's dollar value doesn't make a huge impression on that. But the fact that he is a signed contract, if they're struggling to get to 20, that might make him a little bit more enticing. And also, just the simple fact that it's a signed deal, he's locked up for 2 years, they don't have to do business with him. Like, the fewer negotiations and so on, because George McPhee is the busiest man in hockey right now. So the idea of, say, okay, here's a guy, freshly signed, sealed, delivered, done. And
you know what, Bruce? So all the insiders, all the Oilers insiders are saying they're going to take Reinhardt. So I think they're going to take Reinhardt. When there's that amount of consensus, they've heard, they know, and they're usually right. So I think it's going to be Reinhardt. But when I was looking myself at it, just trying to figure it out, I was thinking if it's kind of equalish players, you always take the signed player over the unsigned player, and you always take the forward over the defenseman. So that's how I ended up with them taking, on my own list, Khaira over Reinhardt. Mm-hmm. Because I also personally believe Khaira is a slightly better player than Reinhardt, but I think it's a dead heat. They're both decent prospects for the NHL next year. But again, Kyra's got that, like, as you say, the contract, and he's a forward. And so that's, you know, I think they'll, like, in San Jose's case, there's not a lot to pick from there. They got Joel Ward on a 1 year deal and Paul Martin on a 2 year deal. They're both high priced veterans, but why did I go with Martin? I'm contradicting myself here, sir, because I went with the defenseman that time. Oh, because when I did work right at the end, they have to get to $44 million.
$3.8 million.
So that was the last factor, and I just thought, well. And having watched Martin in the playoffs and Ward, I thought they were both good players, but I thought Martin's got enough left in the tank that they could actually move that guy and move that contract. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have them taking any contracts that they can't move right now on my own list, except for Clarkson, because, you know, it's almost impossible to know if they're going to take a guy like Pouliot, like contracts that you can't move unless you're throwing in major sweeteners. But I think they could move the Martin contract. So, but I do think they're going to side with the forwards, and so to me the logical pick is Jujhar Khaira and not Griffin Reinhardt. I think it's better for the Oilers if Reinhardt stays, because the Oilers have a problem on defense right now, and
right,
it's that much easier for the Oilers if Reinhardt's there to play on the third pairing. And it'd be nice to see Griffin Reinhardt on the third pairing on the Oilers. I'd like to see, there's so much bad baggage, of course, like there's this faction of fans who would be so quick to turn against him in kind of an ugly, knee-jerk, pissy mm-hmm. way very quickly, but if people could just set that aside, it would be kind of a nice success story for a local guy to make good here. Wouldn't that be nice? That'd be okay? Would that work for you, Bruce? Or are you too angry about the trade and about Shirelli's stupidity to ever get over it?
Fire Shirelli.
Yeah, fire that guy. Fire his ass. You know, pack your bags.
My Vegas team, I dealt with that same $44 million by picking up about five big contracts, and that did not include Clarkson. So Clarkson's contract really moves the needle towards that cap floor.
Did you do a team too? I did. Oh, so who do you have on? Do you have James Neal?
I have James Neal, and he's one. That's one of the reasons I picked him, was to hit that $44 million, and also, I think he's a guy where he could come in, play for Vegas, and they could move him at the deadline next year, and they could probably get a pretty good premium for him at the deadline next February.
So my big dollar guys, who are your big dollar guys? Just give me your
Bobby
big dollar.
Bobby Ryan.
No, Bruce, that's five more years, Bruce, at $7 million.
Marc-Andre Fleury, Bobby Ryan, James Neal, Cody Eakin, and I had another, Joel Ward. Did I say Marc-Andre Fleury? Anyway,
Enstrom?
I did not have Enstrom. I picked a whole bunch of what I call value contracts and a few plump ones to bulk up the dollar value. Bobby Ryan, I see him as being franchise player is a strong word, but a poster boy for Vegas. You know, American-born player, got some experience, got some notoriety. He was a second overall draft pick. You know, he had a really good playoffs. It's a guess. We're all guessing.
Did he have a good playoffs? Because he is a poster boy, Bruce. Contract in the NHL. 25 points in 62 games. Okay, 15 points in 19 playoff games. So there
he was real good. Yeah, he scored an overtime.
So you're going off that, which is fair enough. I was looking at those 25 points in 62 regular season games.
He had a better year than Nathan Hartson.
And thinking better than Nathan Horton.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they'll – oh, my goodness. What are we looking at here? Let me just find that. 7 point. Oh, come on. Internet. 5 years more at $7.3 million for a guy who scored 20-something points this year, Bruce. Now, he did have the good playoffs, so we'll give you that. Yeah, I had them taking Mathot. Take Mathot. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Vatanen. Mrazek, Fleury, Neal, Clarkson. That's about it for the big dollar ones. It's plenty.
Yeah.
All right. So let's we've gone down the list. Let's talk about Jordan Eberle before we get onto the poison pill list of poison pill contracts, because I don't think Jordan Eberle's on that list personally. Mark Spector of Sportsnet. Suggested.
He had a better year than Bobby Ryan, too.
Twice as good. If you go by point totals. Ryan had a better playoff, though, so there you go.
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah. What do you think's going to happen with Eberle? Because, Bruce, for a long time I was thinking Vegas is the most likely. They don't have cap problems. They need scoring. Makes a lot of sense. And I still kind of think that, except all of the insiders, they're singing in chorus. They're singing from the same songbook. Alleluia, mm-hmm. Alleluia. Jordan Eberle will get a lesser, cheaper forward. Alleluia, Alleluia. That's what we're hearing from all of them, Bruce. And when I hear that, I think...
Some of them.
Who's not saying that?
Well, who was saying that the Oilers might not protect Eberle for the expansion draft? Was
well, just Spector, because he's just raising. He just who likes was, raising shit.
Who was saying the Oilers should trade Eberle and keep half of his salary just to get rid of him?
Who
that
Shaga?
Was out there, right? No, it wasn't. It wasn't Rashad.
Who was
but it?
It
was right after the season.
Oh, who was it?
It was DVD that said that right after
Derek
the
Vandy's.
Season. Get rid of him. Keep half his salary. Just get him out of here.
Okay, but what Rashog, Stauffer, and Jim Matheson are all saying right now is a very similar thing. lesser, cheaper forward. And those three guys, Bruce, Mathis and Rashog and Stauffer, come on. Those are the three most plugged in. If they're the three most credible, trusted sources on the Oilers there is. Right?
Right.
Correct?
Okay.
You're not disagreeing. Other than no. They're the best, okay? They're sensible people, good reporters, and they're all saying the same thing. Bruce, this is coming. This is going to happen, and it's just a question of...
Rashog and Maddie?
Yeah.
Did you say? I got all day for those guys.
Yeah. Okay. So there's...
I don't agree with everything they say, but that doesn't mean I don't respect their opinion and their...
And I'm not saying we have to like this. I'm not saying, you know, either of us have to like what's going to happen, but I'm saying this is going to happen, okay? So... I guess that's my only point, which I'm making quite emphatically. But so what do you think? Now, if it's Strome, I don't even know his first name. There's so many of those guys.
Ryan.
They didn't protect him. You know.
Well, like protected eight defense.
They had some important guys to protect, Bruce. They had Adam freaking Pellick. You gonna let that guy go? You morons. Idiots, you don't let
them.
You get a player like Adam Pellick, you hold on to him.
Maybe they know something we don't. There's secrets out there.
They're this far away from giving him a Bobby Ryan contract to Adam Pellick. All right. So what's my point? So I don't know if that works with Vegas. I don't think they got a lot of guys. Maybe Grabner. Like, I could see them taking Michael Grabner. He scored 26 goals. He earns $1.7 million on a one-year deal. So maybe Eberle for Grabner. You know, but I don't think if it's going to be for a lesser, cheaper forward, that doesn't sound like Vegas. That sounds like somebody else. Now, maybe it'll change. Maybe things develop. Things do develop. And the conclusion that all these insiders have reached will change. But I'm not seeing Vegas as a possibility. I'm thinking... somebody else. Now, of course, I'm secretly hoping for Tyson Barrie, because for some reason I really like Tyson Barrie, and I think that's a contract that it's a big contract, but it's that might be the contract that you would really work hard to figure out a way to make it all work, to bring a defenseman like that. But I don't think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be the lesser, cheaper forward. Now, Maddie floated a name that made everybody really, really upset.
Yeah.
Aiken.
Dallas
Aiken.
Yeah, Aiken from Dallas. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, I love that.
Dallas of
that'll
Aiken.
That'll end well.
He'll come into the dressing room. He'll see that food spread full of cakes and donuts, and Cody Aiken will kick it over, and there'll be a new sheriff in town. All right, and that's going to work out really well. All right. So he's an interesting player, because he was terrible by any numbers last year, just terrible. But the year before that, if you look at his numbers, he's like a 20-goal guy or something, like 50 to 20-goal guy, a center. For about 2 or 3 years in a row, he was a good player. And then he hurt his knee last year, and he crashed. He was no good after that. So, you know, yeah. Maddie got a lot of heat for that suggestion. But... that's the concept, and that's why I like Brock Nelson. Actually, so the one guy on the Vegas roster that made sense to me, if they take Brock Nelson, is him for Eberle. 45-point guy, young center. That seemed to be in line with the lesser, cheaper forward, a center, because the Oilers could use a third-line center. And... so maybe that would be one idea. What are you thinking?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking those Islander guys. A lot of them. I mean, are they centers or are they forwards? They move around a lot. So, but that's what you want.
Nelson took a lot of faceoffs. He didn't win a lot.
You want a guy who can play center, sure, and a guy who can also play wing. I mean, I think Todd McClellan really values those flexible forwards. And you got to have them, because if you're going to be playing flip-flop with Leon Draisaitl, then you've got to be able to play flip with somebody else to move into the middle to take his spot. When you do that within a game or, you know, for a run of games, as the case may be. So
Are they actually playing flip flop, Bruce, or is it more like kerplunk?
Well, yeah. I'm envisioning a situation where they start the game with the three guys at center, but during the game they fall behind or whatever. They move Leon up to play with Connor, and then now you have to move a winger into the center of your third line because or second line because you've changed the recipe. You need to have those players.
So there's some centers out there that are teams didn't like. There's what's his name, Cedric the Entertainer Paquette from Tampa.
Oh yeah.
Well, Brendan Gaunce. Brendan Gaunce. I actually like Brendan Gaunce. He didn't have much of a season. He was good in the minors, though. Maybe that'll be the trade for Eberle. What do you see happening with Eberle? What's your? Do you have a grand theory? Like, I've had a number of grand theories over the last few weeks.
One thing Chiarelli said when the topic came up was that he doesn't have to make a move for money. Cap hit reasons this coming season.
Posturing.
So, well, he could be posturing, but he's just he knows what his options are, and he's not going to be forced to move him just for money reasons, I don't think. But if he sees a way clear to make a deal that doesn't stink on hockey terms and that advances the payroll situation, then he'll make it.
Yes.
But, you know, he's... maybe he'll trade him for Bobby Ryan.
Well, Bobby Ryan had a good playoffs, I hear. So,
well, I mean, if you could trade him for Jonathan Marchessault, so yeah, you're probably going to do it, right?
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, I think Ryan Strome is sort of the default player that plugs into the theory of the type of trade it would be, but there would be many different players that would fit the
tons bill. And tons of lesser, cheaper forwards than Jordan Eberle. So there's no shortage of them. Alrighty, Bruce, so when I was going over trying to figure out, okay, who's Vegas going to get? What does this mean for the Oilers? Oh, lots of defensemen. Oilers maybe can get a defenseman. What really struck me about this list is the NHL announced the NHL GMs finally had to come clean about every terrible contract on their team. Mm-hmm. And they did that by not protecting players who, many of them they signed recently, like Troy Brouwer. Many of them recent signings who now are suddenly on their non-protected list.
Jason Demers.
So I'm going to go down to the list here and get a few of them. You can tell me if you think any of them make sense for the Oilers. There's Matt Beleski from Boston.
Uh-huh.
3 years at $3.9 million, Bruce.
Yeah, he's not a bad player, but I never thought he was
a
$4 million player.
Cal Clutterbuck, Bruce. Want him? He's got only Cal Clutterbuck, 29, 5 years at $3.5 million. More years of Cal Clutterbuck.
He's not a bad player, but I'm not sure he's gonna age well. With the style of play he plays. I mean, maybe he's... this is a bad comp in a way. Chris Neal, a guy who could just kept on playing forever, even though you thought he's
Matt
run
Hendricks
into the wall.
Twice, Matt Hendricks at twice the price.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think he's a better player than that, but not twice as
not
good.
Much.
And, oh, man. 5 years of that?
Zach Bogosian. Zach Bogosian.
Bad
I think he's got $5 million a year. I think it's two or three more years. Okay, there's Detroit. Darren Helm, 4 more years at $3.8
million. Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Erickson, 33-year-old defenseman, 3 more years at $4.3 million. Yeah. All right, we got...
Well, Detroit's top four defensemen, $20 million. They're under lock and key for $20 million for Mike Green, Danny DeKeyser, who I think is a pretty good player, although I don't know about $5 million, Jonathan Erickson, and 200-year-old Nicklas Cronwall. Nice defense.
Dustin Brown, 5 more years at $5.9 million. Marian Gabrick, 4 more years at $4.9 million. I guess we can see why Dean Lombardi got fired. You know, that's
they couldn't fire the contracts when they fired the GM that signed them, eh?
You see these teams, like, come on. Holland and Lombardi knew what they were doing. And it's this tough thing when you're winning. And Shirelli, I think, ran into it in Boston because you want to keep that team together. You're so close. You know the window's closing. So you just got to sign that player. So you give Marion Gaborik that contractor. And you give Helm that contract or Jonathan Erickson just because you just need that piece. There's no other way to get it. And it's a big part of the team chemistry. So, man, and that's where you end up. All right, there's a few more. Riley Smith. Let's find Riley Smith. That's another one that leapt out at me. He's not a bad player, but would you want him for five more years at $5 million? Wow. Andrew McDonald, which is a famous bad contract, like Dustin Brown's, three more years at $5 million.
Well, Andrew McDonald, that's the Chris Russell contract that everybody's afraid of.
Yeah. Hey, how about this for a one-year deal? Jason Garrison, can he still play at all? He's got an expiring contract at $4.6 million. He's 31. You see, guys like who can still play a bit and are just overpaid for 1 year, that puts him in a different category with the Oilers for this coming year to me. Because I do think you need a veteran who can play. And it's okay to overpay that guy 1 year.
For one year.
So maybe, I don't know. I haven't watched Jason Garrison recently. I can't tell you, but maybe that at work. Somehow I doubt it. People will be screaming about that. Okay, Michael Bodker, 3 years at $4 million. The guy who got
press boxed
in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Niemi and Leighton, they're both 1 year left. Expiring contracts at 5.9 and 4.5. Joe Colburn, Carl Soderberg, I don't have their contracts right in front of me, but they're not good. And then the Oilers with Pouliot and Fane. Now, Fane actually might help the Oilers this year. I think on a bottom pairing, Mark Fane might be just okay-ish and might be able to help the Oilers. He's got every motivation to play better because he's been in the minors 2 years in a row. He's in last year of his deal. He seems like a totally decent guy. And I've criticized him so much, I feel bad because he does seem like a hardworking, very decent human being. And I hope, I actually hope he can step up and play on the third pairing for the Oilers. They could use him. And he has been a good player in the past. He was just thrown in over his head and he wasn't right for the Oilers. So they got, and Pouliot's the other guy on the list. And man, if they could just, if that's to me, that's hitting the grand slam, double grand slam home run is moving Benoit Pouliot's contract out this summer, Bruce, because they got all kinds of wingers who are cheaper alternatives who are at least as good as Benoit Pouliot right now. And if they can move that, Slepyshev's as good as him, don't you think? Pitlick?
Well, they're different, but.
Who would you rather have on the ice?
I like the Pouliot that was here the first 2 years he was here, and unfortunately he suffered two injuries in each year, so we got two incomplete, pretty good years out of Pouliot, like 20-goal, 50-point type years. And he does have his strong points. One of them is he was pretty good on the penalty kill this last year, the first time he tried it.
That's a fair comment on Pouliot,
But, you know, so there's roles to be filled, but he's not $4 million worth of role player at this point, unless last year was a complete anomaly and he's somehow going to bounce back. And he had every chance to do that in the playoffs and did nothing.
Here's one for you. Jory Laterra, 29-year-old, two more years at $4.7 million.
Yeah. How'd you like that? I bet he's available too. And you realize, of course, that your list of poison pill contracts is missing a hugely, probably the worst group of the contracts, which is the no move contracts that are also, and especially bad, are the no move contracts that have the bonuses built in such a way that they're virtually buyout proof as well. And that's your classic bad as it can get contract if it's for the wrong player. There's just nothing you can do with it.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, eh, with Milan Lucic. That's all I'm saying. Fingers crossed, Bruce.
Goes south where they're stuck.
Yeah, God. Fingers crossed. The only thing I can think of is, don't they, when they have a new CBA, they have that, sometimes they've had that, you know, take the contract and axe one free deal. Take all the other contracts and axe one free, each team. And yeah, I don't know when the new CBA will be negotiated. I don't think we know that yet, but
2020 or 2022, depending on whether it gets extended.
So if things get bad enough, we can always, you know, and hopefully it won't. Hopefully Milan, he's been awfully durable. He's awfully committed and tough-minded, and maybe that's gonna work out better than I hope. Many people hope. Like, honestly, I don't have. I think that. And I said this when it was signed, like the last 3 years of that contract scare me. So anyway, that's a worry for another day, not today.
The good news and the bad news is that he was reportedly limited by a back issue this past year, which probably means that he's capable of playing better, but a back issue is its own concern and not just short term. So,
oh yeah. Limited. Is that the good news? You know, you said it's the good news and the bad news. Cause you know, he's not going to get, he's going to be okay. He's not going to get cross-checked in the back next year. That's not going to happen. There's a rule about that, Bruce. If you get cross-checked, that's 2 minutes for cross-checking, right?
Well, yeah, there is a rule. There was a rule.
When was it last enforced? 2007, I think.
You know when the turning point of cross-checking came for me was when Brad McCrimm was quoted. This was after when they first came out with the aluminum shafted sticks. So I'm putting myself way back in the last century here. And Brad McCrimm, an enemy defenseman, whether he played for Boston, Philadelphia, or Calgary, he was the enemy. He was a great player, Brad McCrimm.
And I
always respected him. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. But the quote was, "I like these aluminum sticks because they don't break when you cross-check an opponent." And I'm thinking, yeah, the stick doesn't break anymore, just the opponent's back does. That's wonderful. Boy, that makes me. And Craig Simpson was a frequent target of his. And you know what happened to Craig Simpson in his playing career? Lost to back injuries, because that guy took about 1,000 cross checks in the back a season. And eventually his back just kind of crumbled under it. And that was it.
Alrighty, man. Well, we've been rambling on and on. And I don't mean, sorry for interjecting that one. After you've been talking.
Aluminum sticks, we're probably about done here.
I could have said that after I was talking at any point in this entire podcast.
We've been rambling.
Absolutely. We've been rambling on. So we're at 52:35, and we haven't even, like, our typical Skype meltdown, which is usually interrupts our podcast.
How's that happen?
I don't know, Bruce. It's like,
great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty dramatic. Okay. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And in the meantime and in between time, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.